Welcome to Dugout Study Hall, a remedial course in baseball stats and proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I'm your host and expert layman, Matt Goodwin, and I am joined, as always, by your fake baseball economist, Alexander Chase. A very quick note about this episode. We strive for putting out the best audio quality possible. Hopefully you've noticed. On this one, in between bottles, diapers, and naps, I failed to double-check my input, and so I sound a little bit like I'm calling in from a cave. Luckily, Alexander says most of the important stuff, so our apologies. We will be back next week with our usual cleaner sound, so please forgive us as we chat about early reactions, perhaps overreactions, early storylines, and what you can and should care about as the season progresses in terms of narratives and numbers. Before we get to all of that, Alexander, how are you doing?
You know, it's been an interesting week on my part. I'm currently down a car.
That's not great. Down a car sounds like there's a story to tell.
Yeah, I mean, pretty boring one.
Well, that's good, actually.
Yeah, that's down a car.
You kind of want it to be a boring version of that story. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone just kind of like changed lanes into me, and I need to get it fixed. I don't want to drive it because I'm worried about the wheel. Just the most mundane of all of the story stuff there.
Yeah.
The nice thing, though, is I've been spending a lot more time riding the train to work, which means I have a bunch more time to kill on my commute and that I can use my hands during my commute. So I've been like reading or watching baseball, which is actually really timely. It's been fine, all told.
Yeah, a little bit more time to let the old Alexander think box do its thing. If you've been paying more attention, let's start with my first question for you of the day, which is, what's your favorite storyline of this very young season so far?
I'm going to throw you for like a potential loop here. It's actually been the PitchCom stuff. I've been really into all of that. For one, when it's been working, I found that to be really, really fun to watch, where you'll just see a pitcher get in a groove, catcher really start calling the game quickly, and that tempo pushes in this really fun way. So it kind of adds this interesting sort of like, I'm going to make a comparison to college football and like the old Oregon Ducks when they like realize they can beat you and they just do it really fast. We've seen like not quite that thing, but we've seen some people like really get going with this PitchCom stuff, and the game feels like it's going a tick faster in a way that doesn't feel forced, but more feels like people have an ability to settle into this nice new rhythm. So I like that.
Can you talk just a little bit more in depth about what that is? We're alluding to it, but just in case people don't know what it is you're talking about.
Yes, PitchCom with an M, not con with an N.
Yeah.
Not the thing that we did that one time, but instead a piece of technology. So it's like inside your hat, and we'll get into how this goes wrong later as a result. Inside like the pitcher's hat, they'll have like a little speaker thing, and then the catcher will like press a button on their wrist to like call a pitch, and it'll tell you know, like, I don't know. I don't have one in my ear, but I imagine it's like fastball up or like fastball, and then you press another button for like where you want it, and then it'll be like, things like that, right? So it basically is a way to like relay using not signs that can be decoded, but just like, it's basically like a button radio sort of thing.
Quarterback has in his helmet in the NFL, right?
Right. So we've seen this work out a couple different ways. Sometimes, like especially Major League Baseball, the catchers are calling the games. We actually saw college baseball teams start to get into it. Vanderbilt was very notably using it in their year, if you're someone who follows college baseball. And that led to some really fun stuff where like the pitching coach would get to call some games from the dugout, but they were also letting some more of like the catchers do some stuff depending. So it's an interesting tool that's allowing pace to increase in a way that feels organic, I feel. And I like that. If you take away the time where it's like arguing, but it like from 60 feet away, you let people get into their windup and get set, and they're not just like rushing a throw because there's a pitch clock and the arguing took a second, right? I think that's what we worry about. Also, all those batters, like, I got to leave the box and readjust my wrist straps. If they can get the pitch called quickly, they're not doing as much of that playing around.
Yeah. So
I like it a lot, actually. I feel like it makes for a nice viewing experience that also it seems like they're enjoying because there's no miscommunication. The other side of it, though, is when it doesn't quite work, which is really funny as well. So you'll see these instances where, like, you know, especially like the away pitcher will be like taking off his hat and everyone thinks he's cheating and getting sticky stuff. And he's like, nope, he's just trying to turn the volume up because the fans are laughing. He can't hear it all.
Yeah, right.
So I'm interested to see where that goes. But like, it's made for some nice humorous, like little moments so far where you, like, you'll see some people like running up to the mound to figure what's going on. Obviously these catchers can still just do their regular sign stuff, but like, I find that this is, it's not like a solution seeking, or pardon me, a problem in search of a solution in search of a problem. That's the thing I'm trying to say. Like, it's not that.
There you go.
It's not just like, we got this tech, let's spend some money on it and say that it's fixing these things. I think it's a nice step forward in a lot of fun ways. And yeah, so I feel like that's also a storyline that like doesn't make anyone really distinctly the villain, which is nice. Some other things where we can complain about people, but you know, I always suspected it's like Manfred's trying to shrink the game and sell more Bud Light ads sort of people would probably get angry, and I don't really see feel like I've seen that.
I'm surprised that the umpire being able to speak isn't sponsored. This call brought to you by Budweiser. The guy was safe at home plate. Thanks.
This
shirt's coming.
Brought to you by your local like eyewear or whatever. Like Doctor Whatever's LASIK committee or LASIK committee. It makes no sense, but you know what I mean.
A committee. A committee of people doing LASIK. I'm not sure I'd want to be on the table for that one.
The LASIK cartel.
Yeah, right. Or the Verizon call. I'm sure it's coming. I'm sure it's coming. Of my favorite things from the beginning of the season are more like the on the field. So there's so many to choose from, like Matt Brash going out and being awesome. I know that was something we were talking about going into the season, about him earning that last rotation spot. Similarly, McGill being unbelievably good. And then Stephen Kwan, who we'll get into. There was a moment, though, in the last couple of days, by the time you're hearing this, Brett Phillips, not only is he just an amazingly fun person to watch, he was pitching, he made an amazing diving catch. It's just crazy stuff, but there was a game where he had spoken to a young lady who was going through cancer, and she had given him a wristband and some words of encouragement for his game, and he went out there, and they were interviewing her in the stands. At the same time, he hit an absolute moonshot bomb home run, and he didn't realize it at the time, but afterwards they were interviewing him, and he showed real emotion. And I really think those beautiful moments is really what baseball is all about. We wind up stuck in these statistical conversations a lot, and rightfully so. I mean, it's a huge part of fantasy and the game. We talk about ADPs, and we talk about just all sorts of things. But at the heart of it, I think the reason we all came to baseball in the first place is because it got us in our heart somewhere. And that was a pretty awesome moment. So if you haven't seen that, I'm sure you can find it on Twitter pretty easily. Go check it out. It's really very, very touching. And those are the kinds of things that I think baseball is the best at, maybe of all the sports.
Yeah, it was really fun. I've already been to a game. I went to the second game of the season for the Nats when they were facing the Mets. There was already drama in that game. Lindor got hit in the jaw by a pitch, and the benches and bullpens cleared. Yes, I was. Wow. I was sitting around a lot of very angry Mets fans.
Yeah,
I had a lot of fun there. I posted to Twitter a picture of this Mets bro who was standing like near the foul poles where we were in left field, who was trying to heckle Yadiel Hernandez by yelling his Wikipedia page at him at one point.
And like, do you know your birthday? Because I have it right here.
It was so funny. Like, these very polite, like obvious season ticket holders just told him, hey, can you go sit down? You're being annoying. Loved that.
Yeah. Did he listen?
Yes, actually he did.
Nice.
A notable thing that you may not have caught as clearly in that broadcast that happened after Lindor got hit is when he got hit, the Nats actually had two arms up in the bullpen, which is a little bit suspicious to me, I will admit. I think Cishek came in, threw inside, was immediately booted from the game. They had Sean Doolittle also warming up in the bullpen at that time, and that was his first game back with the team since his last season away. And he got, I would say, an ovation comparable to Max Scherzer's and just below that of Juan Soto's. The fans do love Sean Doolittle. And he was pitching the sixth. He's not closing or anything, but he looked good. I'm so happy to have him back, like just personality wise, and also that he looked good. Every team has to have that sort of story, I feel like, to really sell the team as a concept if you're not good. And I'm glad that the Nats do. And I know a lot of teams have like their guy that they're happy to have for different reasons who are, you know, like healthy and going right now. So it's nice to have that for like an emotional sort of reason. I'm happy for Rays fans that those Brett Phillips moments keep coming.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just one of those things where I feel like if that was the face of the game, people who don't normally care about baseball are going to care about those moments. And then, oh, by the way, while you're here, there's a reason why these things keep happening around this particular game. Why don't you check it out for an inning or two? I don't know. I, again, as somebody who absolutely loves this game, I hate kind of seeing the direction it's going in terms of popularity and engagement and all of that. And these really, really beautiful things do exist. They've always existed. And I just wish they were a little bit more of the focal point. Let's move on to something that might be a little bit more controversial. We'll start with our pass fail earlier in our rundown here. And that's the new Houston Astros City Connect jerseys, uniforms and hats. I know that you talk a lot about the Astros, having been in the area as a youngster or a younger, because you're still fairly youngster. Yeah. What, Brad, it's all relative from where I'm sitting. You are. What are your thoughts on these Houston Astros City? Because I know how much you love the Nats, and they're really, I do think they missed an opportunity to be more bold with the pink. And I think you suggested that. Because especially on TV, it washes out a lot. But what are your thoughts here on the Houston Astros?
I like them a lot. I think I've had a lot more experience than a lot of the average baseball fan in seeing weird concept jerseys actually get used in terms of soccer third kids, which are often horrendous and often very weird and sometimes really hit. And I think I brought this up previously. I've seen some people online. I'm not good at names here because it's kind of like a really dumb thing to like attach to someone. Basically say it's like, you know, the only good ones are the ones that like replace the originals and things like that. Or like the only ones I like are the ones that I would actually want to see them wear full time. I don't believe that. I want your alt City Connect jersey to be something that you do not want them to wear all of the time, but you do want them to wear for 10 games for like 2 or 3 years max and then get replaced out. That you're willing to purchase and that you really like. It's just got to fill some weird niche and move on. And I think it's a hard needle to thread, right?
It's because you're right. You don't want it to be the kind of thing that they want to wear on a regular basis, but you don't want them to not want to wear it because it's horrendous. I will say this. I love the hats. I think that the hats are really sharp. As a high school kid, I wore a hat and I wore an Astros hat. I'm a huge Red Sox fan, but I didn't want to get into like the whole Red Sox, Yankees, whatever, because I live in Connecticut and there's a dividing line and all that. So I went with a National League team. Was a big fan of Jeff Bagwell at the time, having come from the Red Sox organization, wishing he was still there and not having been traded for, I think, Larry Anderson. You can go ahead and look him up on FanGraphs. And so I wore an Astros hat for many, many years. This is the first time since then that I've actually considered buying another Astros hat. I think it's really, really cool. On the flip side, I feel like maybe as the Astros were going back through their catalog of uniforms, they decided to be inspired by the worst of what they've done over the years rather than the best. It gives me really, really, really strong Epcot in the 80s vibes, which maybe is something that you love, and that's fine. I don't know. It's fine, I guess. I mean, whatever, who cares? But I love those hats. So this is an opportunity for me to at least wax ecstatic about those. So
I think if you're going to do this sort of thing, the hat is probably one of the things you have to do best, because people can buy hats like crazy, and fun hats are fun to have. I think they did a good job of like that alt, but not too alt hat logo. I think that's actually one of the things that the Nats alt does best is that, block W with the like blossoms on it. It looks really nice. Whereas like the curly W, not a big fan. Walgreens hat, not great. This one. Great.
I've never thought that before, and I'll never be able to not think that again.
Yeah. I will note, my girlfriend's last name is W, so she complained that she couldn't buy one because a lot of people would think it's just like a monogrammed hat, which is really funny to
that's
me.
Pretty, that's very funny. I didn't like the W on the City Connects until you told me it was a throwback to the Senators logo.
It's that kind of a throwback. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks very similar, an homage.
Probably. Yeah.
And so, you know, the history fan in me loves that and immediately won me over. So, all right, let's play a game. Are you ready for our Numbers of the Week segment? We're going to play another game.
I'm never not ready, and I'm never fully ready. So, you know.
Yeah, you're always the exact same level of readiness, which is not at all. Okay, well, this is a fun one because I think it's going to help us talk a little bit about something that might be of interest. It's not something that I've heard talked about a lot. And that's talking about pitch value. FanGraphs has a pitch value tool where you can actually see like the value of the pitch, and then they have a pitch value over C, which helps you do like the ratio version of it. We can talk about the maths afterwards and what's valuable and what's not and all of that. But using that tool, I basically went to 22 pitchers and the leaderboards, and sorted the columns by who has the most pitch value for certain pitches. And I want you to try and tell me who you think it is. So this is picking one person out of the field. So I'm setting you up to fail, but it's really just an opportunity for us to talk about this number, and try and understand it. First of all, how it's arrived, how they arrive at it, how it might or might not be useful. So, and I have one more question about it, which will come clearer after we talk about this. So for fastball, the P-Val, the leading P-Val, second place was 3.0. This one's 3.5. Who do you think, as of this moment right now, has the league's quote unquote best fastball?
So,
and when, I believe this would be single pitch event, right? It would only take, am I right about that? You tell me.
Okay, so the way PVAL works is it basically just works off of like run expectancy, like win probability sort of stuff. So context matters and results matter, but like there's a lot of stuff that like doesn't actually matter that much that like we care about going forward. So PVAL does not predict anything, essentially. What you happen to throw at the moment that the game mattered most is basically all that reflects. So we would need then basically to pick out pitches from the haystack that happened to be thrown at the right time and happened to have good results. So pitches that got crushed into a glove, still good. Yeah. So I would think like a fastball that was probably thrown for some strikeouts and then didn't get crushed. I'm going to say, I don't know, Chris Bassett. I have no idea.
No, it's not Chris Bassett. I'm going to give you another guess though, because this is an incredibly unfair thing I've done to you.
Oh yeah, clearly. I'm good with that.
Yeah. You want to take one more shot?
Wait, so this is as of this morning, right?
Yes, as of, so today is the 13th, Wednesday, April 13th.
I'm going to cheat by going someone who's had two starts. Let's go Tyler McGill.
That's an awesome guess. I love it. It's not. It's Michael Lorenzen.
nope, never would have got that. Yep.
So we could have done this all day. You wouldn't have gotten there. So keep this in mind. Fastball 3.5, Michael Lorenzen. Let's go curveball. It's 1.9.
You're going to make me think who actually throws a curveball here that's any good. And it, again, this is going to be a mess. This includes knuckle curves?
That depends upon, you have to ask FanGraphs that question.
We'll figure that out in a second. I'm like, my brain's going to say something silly like Bieber, but I don't. Yeah, let's go with Shane Bieber just because.
Would you like to make another guess?
We'll see how much I want to make another guess here.
I don't think you're going to get this one. No, I would don't be think shocked so either. If you pull this name.
I think the embarrassing me part here is the fun part, but you know, that's let's actually. Okay. Oh, I know. Except I don't, but I'll see. Last night, we did see some really, really fun things from Jesus Luzardo's curveball. So let's say his name.
Yeah, there's a lot of people talking about his performance and how encouraging it was. But the answer here is Kyle Wright. Yeah.
Okay, that's good for me because I picked him up at a lot of places.
And... There you go. There you go. And by the way, this is less about embarrassing you and more about, I think listeners like to think in their head like, oh, they're going to play along, you know, and they're right.
Yeah.
Chance to guess. But from the safety of their cars or wherever their jogs, where they don't have to be wrong out loud in front of everybody like I'm making you do. Mm-hmm. All right. So this is part of what I want to get at because there's going to be a pattern here. Fastball was 3.5 was the best. The curveball 1.9. We're going to go to slider now where it's 3.0. Okay. I want you to try and tell me. Who do you think?
I would want someone who is good, who throws a slider a lot. One of the things that might help me here is I have been every day, which I will not do forever, but I have been doing it every day, cataloging the single game hard contact rate, which would not matter to this, but also like CSW per PA. So like how many earned strikes you're getting per batter and whiff per PA, how many whiffs you're getting per batter. Because... you know, I'm curious, those things mean something early compared to other things. We'll get to that later. So I've been thinking every day, like actively about which people have been working. And it's been such a, just a weird smattering of people. Let's see. Slider that's been working. Oh God. I'm going to have to go in an ace direction. You're going to laugh at me in a second when it's not someone who's been really good. So, I'm going to delay just slightly more. God, I have no idea.
Would you like me to give you a hint?
Sure. I'll take my one hint of the segment here.
This is a name you've already mentioned.
Oh.
It really narrows it down.
Okay. I'm going to go back then to Bassett.
Shane Bieber on this one. God. Shane Bieber.
Last person I would have guessed.
So slider 3.0 for Bieber right now. There's the chain. Go ahead.
I should say Bieber has not had some really excellent peripherals that have made people very happy. If you just heard a crashing noise, that was my cat in my background. So
I work really hard to edit out most of the background sounds, but it's impossible when they happen while you're talking. So that one's going to make it in.
Yeah. Let's see what just happened over there. We're worried about some velo. We're worried about some results, but he has gotten a good number of reasonably good results regardless.
Yeah. The outcomes have still been okay. I know there's a lot of talking about. I have him in a dynasty league and I've had some people asking and, you know, all velocity concerns. And yeah, sure. But maybe talk to me again in mid-May if it's still a problem. I mean, it's still so early on an abbreviated spring training.
Feels like a theme here.
Yeah, I get it. I understand. And if it's going to happen at a point in a season where it's not as concerning, it's now. So we'll see. Changeup. The changeup, the leading pitch value for the changeup is 1.7.
I'm going to tell you that it's not Ian Anderson. That's all I really know here.
That is definitely true. He did not do well.
One of the things about changeup is like the people who throw them a lot are never like my favorite guys, so I never think about them all that much. I know that we did see four pretty impressive innings from Giolito before he disappeared up into White Sox heaven. So I'm going to say his name. I know it's not him.
It's not him. But that's a funny reference. You want me to just give you this one so we don't go super long?
Yeah, that sounds good.
It's Zach Davies. change up. Pitch value 1.7. Now, here's something I noticed. Fastballs and sliders tend to be thrown harder than curveballs and changeups, correct?
Okay. Sure.
Generally speaking, right?
Yeah.
And the fastball pitch values value and the slider pitch values were higher by like a good bit. And that wasn't just these guys who are leading.
I think it's
usage. Is there anything to that in the formula and the way it's calculated, or is that just one of those weird sample size, like the beginning of the year, early season nonsense?
So here's why we don't care about p-val. P-val is exclusively results dependent, and it's exclusively how the results of the pitches affect run expectancy. So for the most part, all you really care about is like, okay, so you threw your fastball and you went from 0-0 to 0-1. Takes up a tiny bit of p-val. So the run expectancy goes a tiny bit down because you're ahead in the count. You know, you threw your changeup and they hit a double. Your p-val for your changeup sinks. So fastballs being used a lot the ones that really worked can have good p-vals. Sliders being used a lot. There are a lot of people who are really slider forward, right? So you're right. Just likely to, if we throw enough darts, have someone who hits a three. There aren't as many people who throw changeups a lot, throw curves a lot. So they're less likely to have the dartboard hit something that's a high number in any given game. I really like, actually, this is an exercise in why we don't care about things that are exclusively outcomes-ish
right.
dependent right now. So that's a really good number to bring up. The hilarity is exactly what we're looking for right now. And there are a lot of other things you can take that same set of criteria. Like, I do not care a single bit about a single pitch WOBA today. I probably won't for quite a while. I pretty much never do, but I definitely won't for one season. And PVAL is not quite that. It does have the nice things about counts, which WOBA doesn't. Like, there's this part of me that's like, if we could take out some of the stuff from PVAL and add in some of the stuff about, like, ex-WOBA, you know, like, not make it not, like, exclusively, like, results-dependent or, like, count-dependent, there is a version of PVAL that could be kind of interesting.
Like, location, kind of a thing.
Like, right? Just a... how much did this pitch help you as in terms of like the counts that you went in? Because that's something I've been like thinking about a lot since our pitch con with an N episode about CSW and like the different counts and how like OO counts is really easy to throw called strikes. And like, if you're not getting that many of them in an OO counts, you're actually not doing that well. I'm sure there's a PVAL thing out there that someone could make. Jordan White and I have talked about something adjacent to this, but it's not quite the same. The you could make that would do something cool here, but PVAL itself in it.
I'm just thinking about those guys who throw great pitches and the hitter just happens to best them on in that moment, where that actually should probably be a higher PVAL than it's going to come out now because it's results oriented rather than he executed his pitch. The guy just had quick hands and went and got it, you know, that sort of a thing.
Even then, like pitch WOBA, like the pitches you execute a whole lot that are just never the last pitch of an at bat. Like, it doesn't show up anywhere. That's why I don't typically care about a lot of those WOBAs for, especially for fastballs, if people just have good secondaries. I don't care about your fastball WOBA. It's the thing that you're going to use whenever you're about to walk someone or you're behind. Like, it's not your fastball.
The Framber Valdez, right? Where he's not using that pitch in those situations.
That's now, probably I'm gonna pretty ask, good way to put at it, yeah.
Yeah. I want to ask you one more question about this before we get into the meat of the episode. And that is, there is also this opportunity to put these things over C. Talk to us about what that stat is, what and how it changes things, and does it make it any better or worse, or is it just a different way of looking at the same, not really useful information?
If I remember correctly, and my Googling really quickly here has not come up as fruitful as I wish it would. I believe the over C is per 100 pitch.
Right?
Yeah, okay, yeah, C for 100. Yeah, okay, good. Yes, if it's per 100 thrown, that's way better, because then you get to do it per like a reasonable denominator. That what we said earlier, like people throw the fastballs more, their p values are going to be higher. It allows you to set up the who's, and because they count adjust, it actually works here. Whose fastball is doing more for them? And you can compare some people who throw it like 25% of the time. People who throw it 45% of the time. Now, there are issues. Right. Just telling someone they should throw a pitch more will throw the whole balance of what they do off, and everything ends up different. What we said earlier about the fastball being like the pitch that kind of just gets blamed for everything results-wise because you have to throw it when you're behind. If you can't command your breaking pitches, that'll show up in some weird ways here. But I genuinely do like that. I also especially like that whenever you get to compare people who are just going to be throwing like more innings than other people. It allows for some more fair comparisons. So yeah, fair denominators, pretty much always going to be in favor of them.
Awesome. Well, we are going to continue this episode on the other side of the break, talking about what else we can kind of glean from the first week of the season, what matters, what doesn't, signal, noise, all of that. But before we do it, we're going to take a small break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
And we are back. So, Alexander, I'm going to start with a question that I got from just a group text that I'm in. And I was just asking people kind of what's on your mind about the first week? What's a question you'd like to maybe have us address? Kind of like a pseudo mailbag, I guess. And this question comes to us from friend of the pod, Matt Vining. And he's talking about Stephen Kwan. Obviously, he's come onto the radar gangbusters so far this year. And he says, obviously, he will eventually start to miss baseballs. But what about his approach in today's game? So he's looking more for high contact, average, not really the fly ball revolution kind of hitter. How does that play? How does that sustain? And is his ability, his proof of concept that you can still do that today, maybe the spark of a pendulum swing back to more guys trying to be successful that way? What are your thoughts?
Well, I actually want to take this back to an interesting little moment in baseball history. So Kwan is an Oregon State prospect or product. He's an Oregon State product.
Yes.
That's probably the better word. He was on the same team as a guy named Nick Madrigal. Are you familiar with Nick Madrigal?
I have heard of that name, yes.
Yes. So Kwan basically did all the same things as Madrigal in terms of not striking out in college, being just otherworldly in terms of not missing baseballs. He also, I think he had a higher OBP in that same team in that same year. The problem is just he had a lower ISO, so he went lower in the draft. Notably, neither of them were hitting like anything other than basically singles is like what's happening there. Singles and some doubles, no home run threat. Now, you know that when guys are young, they're going to come into their power unless they're Torkelson in college. And, you know, the result though is like, despite the fact that we still like really easily throw a 20 grade on Madrigal's power, Kwan went like 100 something picks later than them in the draft. Like maybe 150. Can't remember exactly. I'm not looking it up. It's not that big of a detail here. So there's been evidence that these people exist. They are drafted. Some of them are really highly touted. Madrigal is a guy that people were stoked about. I think a lot of them was kind of like, he'll never miss, and maybe he'll steal 30 bases. He'll steal 30 bases led to him being on a whole lot of rosters. Also, defense, I think both of them are going to be bust defenders. We'll see.
It doesn't matter for our games, but it does matter for opportunity.
Maybe for their games.
Right.
I can't. All that defense stuff is purely beside the point here. The thing is, you have to be like an alien, essentially, to make that. I cannot hit the ball to the fence, but I can hit it over the shortstop's head, and I can hit it all of the time sort of approach work. People try it all of the time. They are in the league. They just are not hitting second and third on smart teams for the most part. There are caveats. There are definitely caveats. I think the teams that were really into them end up maybe not always being the smartest teams. A secondary kind of bit here, though. This archetype doesn't miss a whole lot. And maybe if we can get them to pull the ball more and we can build some more power, they'll turn into something. It's something that Cleveland's been after for a long time. And eventually some of them just start hitting home runs. Jose Ramirez was a batting average, not a whole lot of power, kind of like fringe-y prospect who is now an MVP candidate and has been for basically everything other than like a half season and change over the past 5 years. He's been awesome. Francisco Lindor just got paid like, I don't know, a quarter of what the Nats are going to sell for. Something like that. Yeah, like these people are really good when they develop the power. When they don't develop the power, you get, have you seen the Angels infield over the past few years? you can be that guy to a degree. There are trade-offs. I should note, hard contact is roughly as good as a walk. You have to, in search of this, not walk 0% of the time also.
Hanser
Alberto is a guy who like doesn't strike out a whole lot, doesn't walk a whole lot, because he swings at literally everything. The thing that's interesting about Kwan is like he's looking for a couple pitches he knows he can hit really well. He's really good at using his contact ability on purpose, so far it seems, to foul off a lot of stuff. He's got the ability to really turn on stuff inside, and teams have seemingly been pitching him outside, and he's just foul it off if he doesn't want it, hit it if he does, and he's walking a good deal because, you know, he's got the ability to recognize stuff. So he's a superhuman. You cannot just choose to not miss the ball and choose to read whether or not it's going to be exactly your pitch as well as he does. A lot of people are guessing with a lot of power up there. The guess and hope and you are really strong like archetype clearly still works. I want to note that hasn't stopped working. As pitchers have gotten better,
way more prevalent than it has been in the past.
I often think about this. I'm with you here. I often think about this episode of the now defunct Rip in Peace Ringer Baseball show from early last year, pre-sticky stuff breakdown, where they're talking about how pitchers have just gotten more and more broken every year. Every year, the strikeout rate goes up a tick, and that happens long enough, you know, hitters have no chance. Well, that has made it harder to be the guy who just reads what the pitch is doing. If the pitches are moving more and your decision point, they all look the same, it's becoming an increasingly impossible task to be Stephen Kwan. That's why he's so impressive.
That makes sense.
And that's why if you can't do anything but guess, the guys who just guess and then swing really hard are being rewarded because the other thing has been nerfed, so to speak. So
harder to do the other approach, and so it's okay if you hit 220 now because a lot of people are. So let me ask you this really significant question: is this sustainable? Is Kwan the guy we should all be going out and rostering immediately, or is this fool's gold in the end?
I want to reference back something that to credit Devin Fink here for pulling this really great tidbit all told. I think Rob Silver also pulled something similar, so I want to give them both credit here for different stuff. So Fink notes what Stephen Kwan's preseason versus rest of season WRC plus projections are from both Zips and Steamer. He went through like five games from a 111 to a 118 in Zips, and from a 117 to a 127 in Steamer. Notably, those are both, they think he's going to be considerably better than league average without him playing a single day of Major League Baseball. And then based off of five games of data, they bumped him up like 7 to 10 points. Silver pulls a lot of the same stuff, but also like found like the, if you include what he's done for the first 5 days, Steamer has him projecting for like a season long WRC plus of 135, which is really good. That is between Pete Alonso and Rafael Devers. I just want to say there's a whole lot of regress to the mean. What the heck is going on here? Regress to the mean going on. But the machines like him. And I should also note some of the IRL scouts and prospect people were actually pretty into him as like a, hey, we're going to sneak this guy up our board 150 spots into the back end of the top 100 prospects. So he's not a nobody. This isn't truly a fluke. He did add a lot of power last year. Again, here's a big surprise. The prospect lives. People loved him. Yeah, I follow him on Twitter and pay for their stuff. So of course it's who I hear first, but a lot of people do really like it. It's not impossible that he's really good. Michael Brantley always has a great WRC plus. Like, do you know how good he was for Houston last year? He was also in that 130-ish range, and he got buzz. And
exactly,
I think
because
this is
not the long ball, right?
This is the fantasy side of things, and this is what really interests me. Cleveland's not Houston. Their top half's going to be good, but it's not Houston, and it's not quite Houston's park, though it is nice. If he continues to add power, and he really gets the most out of his approach, sure, he might be a guy who hits like you get a Jeff McNeil-ish sort of profile, like that one really good year of Jeff McNeil
when he was good.
Yeah. Where he like stole double digit bases and hit double digit home runs and had a really good average at the top of a pretty good lineup. Like that ends up being the home runs you miss and the RBIs that become like league average for your 12 team RBI don't hurt you as much as you gain elsewhere, and he ends up being a $10 to $15 player.
Cool.
Do you know where though where Brantley was going in like main events for the NFBC though? Like, do you know what pick he was
going at? Far too late. I don't know the number, but way too late.
275.
Yeah.
So if Brantley got dropped in a 15-team league, I would spend a bunch of fab dollars to pick him up. It's just a really interesting, like, do you know what product you're buying, rush towards this guy? I really right. like leagues where I can care about those guys. And it's just like, we're all freaking out about a tiny sample because, and I think this is the point that we really want to make here, the sorts of things he's doing are so outside the norm and are fueled by the sorts of stuff we can believe fastest. We don't care about his batting average. We are all freaking out about his whiff rate and his ability to draw walks. And that is, I think, what we really need to care about here most.
Although I'll push back a little bit on that. I do think batting average, if you can get it from a guy who's not hurting you in those other categories, it's still a category for a lot of people.
Oh, I mean, in terms average. Of believing you, I'm with you.
Yeah. Oh, in terms of, okay, I got you. In terms of whether or not this is sustainable. Yeah, because he could still hit okay. But again, if it's a zillion singles and no steals and all that, then it's kind of empty average. I get you. All right. You have here in our rundown a list of things I care about so far, and you have them tiered. And I would like to have time to go through all of those. I am a little bit on a short leash in terms of time today. I have my my baby son sleeping upstairs while I'm on vacation this week, which is why we're able to do this midday, and I can drink coffee while we're recording. So I have a little bit of a time limit here, but I want to get to all of these. So I'm just going to kind of be the one who guides us through the process. You're going to be the Sounds one who good. Gets to talk about what you're saying. And I'm just going to kind of be like, let's make sure we're on time and on target here. So things Alexander cares about so far, tier one, already trusted. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I have one item in this tier, and that's, was this guy good last year? I want to remind people that all of the data we have last year still applies. And just because so-and-so has yet to record a hit or whatever it is, or maybe is batting 500, whatever the number is, and you're looking at those outcomes and you're like, he's, you know, just gone off to a great start. If they weren't good last year, or if they were good last year, that's important. They're still the same person for the most part, probably. So that's the very first thing I care about.
Sorry, I told you I wasn't going to jump in, and here I am jumping in. But by this time next week, they'll have more than double their plate appearances, right? I mean, so we're at that part of the season where the numbers are nice for confirmation bias. They're nice for feeling good about grabbing the right guy off the wire. They're
victory good laps?
For victory laps and maybe some sneaky trades here at the beginning if somebody is looking to maybe sell low because they're panicked a little bit. But again, by this time next week, we're going to have doubled our sample size, probably at least. So keep that in mind as well. All right. Tier two.
Can I throw a name into that last one? Just an example of how I'm thinking. Last night we saw Zach Wheeler's first start. He wasn't great. We know that he was like ramping up a little bit slower. He didn't get a ton of whiffs. He got a good number of call strikes. He didn't get rocked. The line was really good. But like, if you're like, oh, the underlying data is bad, he's toast, drop him, trade him, whatever. No. He was good last year. We don't have reason to believe that he's not going to be good in May. Trust yourself.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Tier two, mostly trusted already, but hey, things happen.
Yeah. So this is like the stuff that we're expecting to stick the fastest. That's new information is kind of like what this tier is all about. So the things I'm looking for here are like, first and foremost, I think the easy part, like lineup choices or managerial usage changes. So that's things like Dylan Carlson suddenly batting leadoff. That seems like that's likely to stick. His value went up. Conversely, some other players in that same Cardinals organization have had their values change a little bit. I'm really happy to accidentally roster Carlson in a dynasty league where I inherited a team. I would not be nearly as excited if the guy that you drafted to steal 30 bases is suddenly batting eighth. Who is that I'm referring to? I don't know. I can't remember his name. That's the whole reason I'm speaking this way. I love it when I do this.
Who am I referring to?
What is his name? I'm looking up Tommy Edman. Oof. Yeah. Yeah. So
Tommy, because I traded Dylan Carlson away and I have Tommy Edman. So of course that is how it's going to work for my dynasty squad.
Yeah. God. Weird team. Corey Dickerson is DHing and batting fifth for the Cardinals.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, so that's the sort of stuff that I'm going to trust immediately. Also, just like it has to be true. Like, someone is throwing harder than they ever have been. You can believe that they're probably going to continue to throw harder than they ever have been, especially if they were doing it in spring training. A lot of spring training data kind of bleeds into this. Or maybe if you can see someone has demonstrably lost a bunch of velo and a bunch of spin on something. Or maybe you could say added pitches, changing pitch shapes. These are the things. They're doing something differently. I would also, if it were the case, if you can see that someone's clearly lost a step in terms of their sprint speed, maybe because they're, you know, they returned from some sort of long-term injury and like it seems like they are not hitting anywhere near that top speed. Maybe like they tried to steal second and you have like a reliable sort of thing. I don't know that we're going to have any of those readings fast enough of like someone's top end sprint speed should be. But like in theory, that's the sort of data I'm talking about here. Has someone's body failed them? Have they suddenly hit a way new max exit velocity, like twice even? I'm willing to believe those sorts of physical-ish trait sort of things immediately.
Yeah, that makes sense. Things that have a story and not don't look like they're just happenstance in a small sample size. It makes perfect sense.
And I think I believe them for the story, I think is where it is. It's not just like,
the story is believable. Yeah, right. all right, tier three, you have here 25 to 50 plate appearances. You're going to have to elaborate and tell me more about that.
Yeah, so this is like the first sort of like actually measurable data that's not just like Eric Lauer's throwing harder or Alex Cobb's throwing harder sort of stuff. This is like the let's check out what they're doing. And this is the stuff it's mostly choice driven stuff for hitters.
So it's like sticky within that number of plate appearances.
We're starting to believe it's sticky. Yeah, I would say. So this is especially going to be stuff where I'm interested for like new arrivals. So stats like someone's swing rates in and out of the zone, just in general. Those were there. I'm going to start to believe that. I'm also willing, if you're way outside the outlier, to believe that Stephen Kwan's going to have a considerably above average contact rate, both in and out of the zone. I think of like Seiya Suzuki, who is not whiffing a whole lot. He's not chasing a whole lot. He's not swinging a lot in general. I have reason to believe that in the intermediate term, that will stick, that he's going to be the sort of guy who is not going to chase a whole lot. Now, part of that is a choice, it seems. He is being very selective. He's had a couple called strikeouts, but he's not whiffing a whole lot right now. It's a very interesting piece of trivia in the PL Trivia channel earlier this morning. He has 5 strikeouts and 2 whiffs so far. I'm willing to believe that sort of data is reasonably real so far, but, and I think this is important, he could start to change his approach a little bit as he gets a little bit more comfortable with major league pitching. Where I think that stuff is going to be more likely to just stick longer term is often for like prospects coming up that like this is who they are. They're going to not swing a lot. But like those sorts of stuff, it's a choice. Maybe it could change, but we need to see evidence that it's changing. In the intermediate term, I believe that Torkelson's going to be patient. I believe that Suzuki's going to be patient. I believe that Kwan's going to be, I'm not going to call it super patient, but patient. His ability to foul stuff off outside the zone, I'm going to believe in as well.
Selective maybe is a better word for him, right?
Right. And you can probably think the exact opposite for someone who's not doing those things well, who I'm just not thinking about because I'm not interested in picking them up or patting myself on the back for already rostering them. On the pitching side, I'm willing to more than anything else, big caveat here, after a couple of starts, care about someone's like the whiffs they're getting, not whiff rate, but just like the total number of whiffs they're getting in a game, whiff per batter, I prefer to like swinging strike rate, because usage and stuff. But whatever, like stuff plus ish sort of stuff is stable after a couple starts. A really great tweet from Eno this morning that we have in our channel, and I'm sure a lot of other people have already seen. But Matt Brash has the best stuff plus among all starters who have gone so far. And like pretty much everyone's gone once. So he note that it needs about 3 starts to stabilize. That's going to be somewhere around 60 to 75. But if you're way outlier on that stuff, you could probably start to believe it ish a little bit more early on. So and I believe that as of today, I would bet that Matt Brash will end up in the top quartile of stuff plus at the minimum. It's very unlikely for that to go away immediately. It's just like exactly what the numbers are themselves are to take a minute to stabilize. If you're considerably
I didn't mean to interrupt you there. I was just going to say, can you take 1 second and just clarify quartile for people who aren't familiar with that term?
Top 25%. Quarter. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Tier 4 would be then, I assume here you have 50 to 100 plate appearances. So new numbers that would start to be believable around 50 to 100 plate appearances.
Yeah. When I say 50 to 100 plate appearances, it's like imagine that you've just convinced yourself to totally ignore something and like kept it off of your spreadsheet until they hit a certain number. Like, I'm not really going to buy into someone's stuff plus after one start, but that's, I don't know, he faced a good number of batteries. I can pull up how many batteries he faced because I tweeted about it this morning. He faced 21 batters. So like we're getting towards that 25 number. I will definitely believe a stuff plus next start. It's close to on my radar at this point. So these are the numbers where at 50 to 100 PA, they are on my radar. I am actively starting to sort through it, and I'm going to start comparing people a little bit more. So pitcher strikeout rates, I will care about after they're like whiffs per batter. It takes just a tiny bit longer for pitcher strikeout rate to not be dependent on like who you faced, basically. But yeah, so I'm going to start to care about that. For hitters, things do stabilize a tiny bit faster, so I'd start to believe in strikeout rate and a little bit later than that, walk rate and like hard contact rate. I'm not yet going to believe in barrels because there is a little bit of like spray luck for barrels, but they still are helpful. But yeah, like within this month or so, I'm going to care what a player's strikeout and walk rate and hard contact rate are for hitters. I'm going to care about what a pitcher's strikeout rate is. Those are believable within just a few starts. You just got to make sure, especially for pitchers, you can get the having just faced the Oakland A's out of your statistical system.
Yeah, right.
Like, Kyle Gibson is not the greatest pitcher of all time. He just faced the A's.
All right. Are we ready for tier 5?
I think we're ready for tier 5, and this is the thing I'm most interested in.
Okay, and so we're looking at 150 to 200 plate appearances. Let's talk weeks. How many weeks is that?
So this is like about a month and a half to 2 months. So this
for pitchers.
For pitchers, but also for hitters. I think they end up facing. I believe they end up with roughly the same number of plate appearances in a season. It's really interesting
because they get to the pitchers throw against so many more.
In one game.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Think about it. So like Brash faced 20 batters and he's going to face 20 batters every 5 games. Hitters are going to have like four plate appearances.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
That's very simple math I should have been able to do without you having to explain it. But thank you for doing that anyway.
It's just kind of like you don't think to do it. I think it's kind of all that boils down to.
I'm used to thinking in terms of like games and starts and innings and all of that.
But all of like the fair stuff is plate appearances that I found. So I've kind of had to rewire my brain and it's rough. It's really rough. So these are like when you really start to believe a lot of the fun stuff for pitchers. And for hitters at this point, I'm going to really care about barrel rate. And I'm starting to believe things like on base percentage that are going to be a little bit determined by some luck of where the balls have landed. But we're getting there. So we're going to really know who hitters are by let's call it the end of May. Like there are some people who like maybe they had a torrid first few weeks and then people adjust. Let's imagine for a second that suddenly 2 weeks from now someone debuts a new game plan for Stephen Kwan and it just doesn't work for him anymore and everything starts to tank. Totally possible that like his first 150 PA won't be the same as the next 150 PA, but it takes some considerable change in something to the data for that to happen. If things just kind of keep on keeping on. At 150 to 200 PA, we've shaken out a lot of the luck for our system for batters, and we kind of know who they're going to be. For pitchers, it takes a little bit longer, obviously, because your samples, one, get biased by maybe having good feel for a game or two, or not having good feel, facing a bad opponent, things like that. And that's why it just takes a little bit longer. The work that I've done on hard contact rate, whenever I did a lot of like the reliability tests, showed that 150 PAs is when that is going to be true for to be more average or more helpful than just like regressing to average for walk rates, for hard contact rates. So about that time, something like a PCRA-ish ERA estimator that will regress to the mean, but like will regress to the mean less as you get more data in, I'm willing to start to look at that. But I want to note, I will not care what anyone's ERA is ever. I will not care about what... Yeah, I have tier never below this on the rundown, but I want to make sure I said it now. I will not care what a pitcher's ERA is in season. I do not look at them. I've been posting these hard contact rate and swinging strike-ish stuff on Twitter for my own, like, I want to put it there so I can find it faster later, mostly. I'm serious. I don't care if it gets one like or anything else. I just want to have it there for my own sake later.
It's like their little library.
And also, like, it's fun to go back a week from now and say, I really liked that Math Brash start, or didn't. We'll come back to him in a second. And I am not even going to care, though, within, like, long enough that I'm going to be able to pick up someone in most leagues with their FIP, with their Sierra, with their XERA is. It just takes too long for those to really matter. I might like some of those things for descriptiveness to be able to shake out some luck or something like that. But to try to figure out how good someone is, those things just aren't going to be on my radar as we kind of go in for the next few weeks.
I want to sum this up maybe from a different perspective, and you stop me where I'm saying something stupid. ERA is a category, right? So we care about it in so much as we need it to win our leagues. You don't like looking at it as a predictor of future performance, right? Is what you're saying. So while we're talking about these different tiers, starting with tier three, which was your 25 to 50 plate appearances, these are things you can use in season as well, right? If you're looking at somebody who's got a huge, let's say they've got a 5.5 ERA, but they've been good lately, you can go back and look over the last 45 plate appearances for that pitcher has faced. You might want to look at things like whiffs and stuff plus between 50 and 100, right? If you're looking at this on kind of like a rolling graph type of way in season, this is still useful information, right? So 50 to 100 plate appearances, you can then start looking at K rate, walk rate, hard contact rate. Then, you know, if you're at a point in the season where there have been 200 plate appearances, if you want to try and look at these things in their chunks, this is still really useful. It's not just because we're at the beginning of the season, we're waiting for these things to become useful, reliable, sticky things. They're also measures we can use in season to look at chunks of performance to try and help us better understand how to get a guy who is going to give us a better ERA. Because at any point in the season, again, correct me if I'm wrong, we really don't care about what his ERA has been. Those are stats that are already in somebody's lineup and in their bank, right? Yours or somebody else's, or the waiver wires. What you care about is what the ERA is going to be from that point forward. So if somebody's got an 8 ERA now, but there's all signs point to the fact they're going to finish the year with a 4 ERA, well, that's a lot of really good pitching, right?
Right.
In between. Those are silly numbers because that'd have to be like zero runs, right? Or if it's halfway through the season, but the point remains, if you think that somebody with an 8 ERA is going to end the year with a 6.25, that means that they've done pretty well between 8 and 6.25 to get it down that much. So I want to just highlight, and I'm belaboring the point now, but the fact that this is not only useful now, this is useful for analysis midseason as well.
I like the way that you bring up the rolling chart there, because it reminds me of some ways that I've been chopping this up at different points that I'd like to be able to spell out. So I'm going to take a guy like Andrew Vaughn, who I, sidebar, I remember the tier two manager doing dumb things. Oh my God, Tony La Russa, can you please just bat Andrew Vaughn? The starting right fielder, AJ Pollock, he gets hurt. He doesn't play still. It's insane. So if we live in a world where you need like a handful of really good regulars and then you can mix and match after that, a lot of the dumb teams just screw up because they don't mix and match enough. It seems like the White Sox are screwing up because they have not yet identified that Andrew Vaughn is good enough to be an everyday player. That's a whole separate thing, though, and I reached that conclusion, though, when I'm looking at these rolling graphs, and I look at, for example, Andrew Vaughn's 50 PA rolling strikeout rate from last year, and you see it drop from, like, high 20s to teens over the course of the season. Okay. With a lot of other players, though, let's take... I want to make sure I can pull someone out of thin air that I think is kind of useful here. I'm going to take, like... I want a batter who I know that has like swung around on their strikeout rate a lot. So let's take like the longer term thing that we'd look at. I can see his lack of chin. Who am I thinking? Kyle Tucker. doesn't have a chin. And you can just see over time that a lot of the jumps in people's changes happen in the off season. So a nice thing I like to do if I'm ever on Savant's rolling charts, because I just know how to find them, like to use them. They're really quick. I will see it for everyone. I'll set it to like my 100 PA or whatever. I want a longer look and just want to wiggle a little bit less. And then I will take it and I'll break it down into the current season or maybe just the last season so that you don't get that one season to the next bleed where like the things really jump around. Because you know that they're going to. People make adjustments. They hang out with their trainers a little more than they just like fly around the country. They get to get healthy. Whatever it may be. Changes happen. That's why things don't correlate as well year to year as they correlate in season. And that's why I think that some of the biggest advantages you can gain are from caring about these changes in season. So I hope that we can kind of, like, I'm saying this today, over the next couple months or so, we should be able to check in, you know, like, what can we care about up to this point pretty regularly will change. And the what have you done for me lately will change to a degree. So yeah, I think you laid that out pretty well.
Awesome. Well, do you have any final thoughts here before we bring this one to an end? First, I don't know, how many days are we in by the time this episode drops? 10 days of the season?
Oh, man. I'm actually really curious what's frustrated you so far in any of your leagues that you do or don't care about.
The thing that happens every year, which is I have a really awesome team that I'm really happy about, and they go out and are 0 for forever for the first 3 weeks, and especially in head-to-head leagues, I start 0-3, and then I start pulling my hair out, of which there is less and less every day. So that's kind of the thing that's been frustrating me. Yeah,
yeah.
Is that what you were looking for?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking for I'm fishing for a particular, but it's been really funny. Like, I have a league where I swung some deals, and I ended up with Trey Turner and Shohei Ohtani, and neither of them have hit particularly well. Mm-hmm. And it's the entire Dodgers lineup has kind of not been very good, and I have some Dodgers stacks on some teams essentially because it's like they're good, aren't they?
Well, you know what, all that means is that the rest of the season they're going to be that much better. I know that's the gambler's fallacy. I'm just kidding. I get it. I understand.
Point in the episode,
if you had a guy who was hitting, you know, 125 over the course of 6 games in July, it's not even on your radar. It's just because it's now. So, and honestly, you know, I do wonder how much of this offseason nonsense really affected things. I know these are professional athletes, and they always say that they don't need that much time to ramp up, but it does seem like across the board, a lot of these guys just aren't in midseason form. I mean, they're never in midseason form, I guess.
Not even midseason.
It's called midseason form, but they just don't seem like they're where they would normally be in April. And you're gonna have to ride it out. It is what it is. And there are some people who are on fire right now, and those teams are shooting up the ranks, and everybody feels really good. They're going to come back to earth, and your guys are going to, you know, perform the way they're supposed to. And it's going to be the horse race it always is. So stay the course.
I should note, AJ Pollock, definitely in midseason form. Hurt.
Because he's injured. Yeah. That's about right.
Poor guy. I'm rooting for him. I really am.
And Ohtani is in midseason form in one way, and that he is awesome and fun. Did you see he was giving CPR to his bat in the dugout after? after starting so
that's the mindset we got to have, actually, is that he's clearly having fun with it. He knows it's not that big of a deal. You got a steal already. He had a great game pitching. I'm in a couple Fantrax leagues, and I have him in a Fantrax league dynasty where they have recently enabled what I think is the most sensible Shohei Ohtani setting, which is that if you can have him as like in the lineup for one thing, like as a pitcher, and then you also get to accrue his hitting stats, with the caveat, my perfect version of that is you lose your utility spot if you enable that. So I like a thing where you can like have him in both, and like I think we're inching towards that. So that's the thing that like I can ignore everything else if we're inching towards double Ohtani in your lineups without him being like Omega OP.
I have him in ESPN and a daily, which is amazing. But I still, on the days he pitches, I still have to choose whether he's going to be a pitcher or a hitter. Being able to use him in both would, that would increase his value even that much more.
Yeah.
But alas, not the case for this year.
It takes him up worth another $5-6 basically to me if you can
get
his hitting stats on the days he pitches. Yeah, it does.
that's a lot. He was already $5 or $6 bucks above the rest of the league to start, given in a daily league where he's one player, he's already the 1-1 by about $5. So $5 more is pretty significant at that part of the draft.
Yeah, we'll see if I can talk my semi-weekly dynasty league. No, twice weekly. It's not semi. Semi-weekly is, I think, whatever. I don't care.
Bi-weekly is every other week. Yes, and also twice per week. I think you can use it either way. So anyway.
No, bi-weekly is twice, is every other week. Semi-weekly.
I've heard it both ways.
But people are wrong, and that's the fun thing about the English language.
A lot of leagues have actually turned to that, where your pitchers are static for in a weekly league, but your hitters, you can change them out on Friday.
Yeah.
Like a midweek change.
That's NFBC. I'm in this dynasty startup where it's not started up. It started up. It's just a dynasty league now, where you can swap both, but you just don't have that many pitching spots for starters. So like,
and you have to stay within your own roster, right?
Yeah. You're not adding people. I mean, you can, but like, the waivers are like so barren that it doesn't matter because it's dynasty.
Okay.
So it kind of works its way out.
Sure.
If I can convince them to let me throw Ohtani into a pitcher lineup spot and still like lose my utility, or maybe just like plug him into both, basically, that'd be nice, because my team's not very good on the hitting side right now.
Yeah. Well, it might be worth just sacrificing those pitching stats if you had to. Although, if you look at his hitting performances last year on the days that he pitched, it was significantly less good. So anyway, that's all an aside. Thank you so much for being with me on this episode. Episode number 54. Alexander, can you believe it? 54 episodes. That's more than a year's worth of having to listen to me talking to your ear for more than an hour once per week or so. I guess that brings us to the end. So if you just let the people know where they can find us.
Well, they can find you on Twitter at @TheCorkedMatt. I'm on Twitter at @Chase_Rate. And most importantly, you can find our podcast on Twitter at Dugout Study Hall, where you can send us some questions. Please be sure to subscribe to the Pitcherless podcast feed if you haven't done that already. Leave us a good review if you can be so kind. And if you're not already, please consider becoming a PL Plus member so that you can harass us on the PL Discord. And that's it for me.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.